Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
What's up, everybody? This is Jay, and this video is about, is Tariq worth $2 million? Now, we all know that he's a damn fool, and he deserves what he's getting, but is he worth $2 million? Before we do, let's hit that like button. I need to get 200 likes for this video.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was, my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, down. I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government.
Okay, I'm going to restart this clip over and play it to its completion.
We're talking about 781 today. The common denominator, 781 means seven people plus 8 hours equals one house. The first step is seven people. So I'm going to play this through its entirety, the whole Steve Harvey piece, and then we're going back, open up the mics again.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see
$600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. Man, get, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was
credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last run. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Okay, well, the reason why I played the Steve Harvey piece is because there's a common denominator that he used in paying off that tax debt of $22 million. $22 million. And, of course, he had his payment plan, which the federal agents thought he wasn't going to make. You heard what he said, what they said. You know, what are we going to do when he goes to jail or prison? All right. Well, there's a common denominator, and that common denominator is that's the first thing we have in this formula that we have, 781, and that stands for 7 people plus 8 hours equals one house, in our case, tiny house. So we're on step one, and this is 7. And that deals with people. Now, let's reverse engineer how Steve Harvey paid off his, because some of you might be facing an impossible-looking situation right now. It might not be on a scale of $22 million, but you don't know how you're going to do it. So that's where the 7 comes in at. Your number might be bigger than that, might be smaller, but the common denominator is you're going to have to have, you can't do it by yourself. The formula's not one person, 8 hours equal one tiny, no. It's 7 people now. It could be 7 people, 9 people, 12 people. But you can't pull off anything that's sustainable by yourself. I mean, well, particularly if it's dealing with what we're talking about. Now, Steve Harvey, so the $22 million that he paid, and we want to reverse engineer this. We want to reverse engineer it and break it down into parts. We want to break it down into parts. Because the goal is we want a debt-free house. So what they did was they took the $22 million, and he had to make payments, and he couldn't miss a payment, as you heard him say, $650,000 a month. Most people do not make that in a year. Some people don't make that amount of money in a lifetime, or maybe even a half a lifetime. $650,000 a month. Now, there's 30 days in a month But what I'm going to do is essentially I'm going to break it down to, we're going to break it down two ways. If we do it Monday through Friday, because there are 20 business days in a month, barring, holidays or what have you. But in a normal month, there are 20 business days, Monday through Friday. 5 times 4 is 20. So if we take $650,000, which he had to pay back per month, all right, divide that by 20, that means that Steve Harvey would have to earn an income of $32,500 per day. If we, let's say we divide that into 30, okay, that's, he would have to earn $21,666.66 per day. All right. So that's on the 30-day plan. Now, in the audio of him sharing his testimony, all right, he didn't do it by himself. He had people, he had a team of people to help him. Now, the first clue out of this is, number one, as he heard in audio, he said he worked. Work is a model channel of prosperity, but he worked he worked smart, and he worked with a team of people. Now, if you go online and you look up the Steve Harvey Morning Show, all right, and you look at he's working with at least two teams. Team number one is the team that's in the studios. He has Nephew Tommy. He's got about four people, including himself, about four people that host that morning show. All right. Four people that host that morning show. Now, the muscle in that, and if you go online and look up the Steve Harvey Morning Show, okay, and then count how many radio stations carry the Steve Morning Harvey Show. There's got to be at least 100. So let's take 650,000, and then let's divide that figure by 100, meaning 100 radio stations. That means Steve Harvey, with the aid of his boots-on-the-ground local radio stations, they had to bring in at least $6,500 per month. That's what he's got to make. That's got to be his cut, because the radio stations got to get their cut, too. So let's break this down even further. So that's $6,500 per station, okay, in a month. And let's divide that by 4. Okay, that's $1,625 per week. And let's divide that by 5. So they've got to make enough rate, because each one of those radio stations has a sales team. Okay, each one of those 100 radio stations has a sales team. So, and the radio station has got to make money. All right, now, in your larger markets, they can charge, the FM station can charge $325 for a 60-second commercial. So, but they sold the show, he's syndicated. So that's how Steve Harvey was able to do it. Now, he might have 200 stations, but count, if you go to Steve Harvey Morning Show online, you can do it right now, and you count how many markets that he's in. So in the case of Steve, okay, that's how he was able to pull that off. Three steps. Team number one is the talent that he's got in the studio with him during the show. That's about him, including him, four people. Step number two, they have a partner with at least no less than 100 radio stations, maybe 9,200 radio stations, maybe more, counted, it's online. And each one of those radio stations has a sales team that goes out and sell commercials. So, and you know, whatever he charges, but because radio stations, they got to get their cut. All right. And the people in the studio got to get their cut. And, of course, that's how, you know, you got to get a team. So if you're facing, particularly in the financial realm, what looks to be an impossible situation, or if you want to build a house that is mortgage-free, and you necessarily don't need 100 people, but if you got about seven of them, seven, nine, maybe 12 people, you can. The more people you have, the quicker you can build it, and you can build it debt-free. I was talking to, speaking to somebody in Asia this morning, and they're looking to build a house. So what they, what she's done is she's hired two people that have experience in building, and then she's got, let's see, two of her sons, they're going to be helping the other two guy, experienced guys build. So four people, and that's her plan, and giving her, and that's, she's doing that so she can reduce the, how, the price of the, how, you know, cost of the house and whatnot. So we'll be reporting on that as time goes by. But in any event, I'm going to keep it simple right there. All right.
LA.
The first thing you must do is you need to organize a team. Yes, yes, Delmar.
So in a couple of elements, he had a goal, a plan, and faith. He believed he could do it. He did. That's not the folks that the other folks said, what are they going to do with jail? He had a plan, and he believed in the plan and himself, faith. Those are elements that make important.
Hold on, I'm writing these down. Wait a minute. I'm going to put them in these program notes. Oh, come on. Okay. Wait a minute. If I can get my... Okay, wait a minute. All right, repeat that, Delmar. He had what? A plan?
He had a plan to get the money. He had faith to get the money that he could do it. And he did it. It wasn't just after blowing the wind. He had a plan. I believe he let you, the way you broke it down to the amount of money per week, per month, whatever. He had to plan that. And he recognized the same thing you were saying. You reverse engineered. He had a plan. I mean, so many people, so many contacts, so many stations, so many, all that. And he believed it was possible and that he could do it or they could do it.
Right.
So faith is involved here.
Plan, faith, goal, and of course he had a team.
Now, yeah, as you said, he worked. He didn't just put it out there. He worked.
And right.
I heard him say he's just going, just never stopped.
Right.
Yeah, he got it. Right.
So, all right, here's what I got then. He had a plan, in no particular order. He had a plan, faith. Oh, you know what? You also used the word belief.
In itself, and, you know, he could do it.
Right, he believed he can do it.
The other didn't. The folks that set it up didn't. You said they said, well,
right,
so
yeah, the people, yeah, the people from the IRS who said, this is what you got to pay out. If you miss one payment, that's it. They didn't believe it. But believed. Well, you know what? Yeah. But they never sat down, and they weren't faced with the situation that he was faced with. So, that's right. He had a plan. Now, this is something that Delmar's putting out that we can all apply to our individual lives. He had a plan, faith. He had a goal, $650,000 a month. He didn't pick that. That was put on him. He knew he had to work, right? He had to work because he said he said he went to work. You're not going to sit back. You just can't pray this away. Okay. But he went to work. He had the belief that he can do it. And, of course, he organized a team to do it. And let me see. Hold it. Let me. All right, I put that in the program notes. Thanks, Delmo, for that. That's very important. Because, people, this is what we have to do. What, seven? Because, you know, I was speaking to somebody last time. I was talking about it earlier off air. And I said, look, if you get four, I said, this must have cleaned out a basement so she can have a place to stay and put her business. I said, all you need to do is get some contractor trash bags and get you two other people to help you. And within 90 minutes, you're good to go. But she wasn't seeing it. So don't try to argue with people who can't see it. If you can see it, that's enough. Okay, I'm going to play this Steve Harvey piece again because I think, you know, I get something out of it every time.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005. And my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died. And a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people to know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
And even with that example, people building the shotgun house on the weekends, it was simply not a solo project. They organized a team. How big were those teams? We were two, three people, seven people, 10 people, whatever it might be, but they had a team. But as you said, pointed out, Delmar, via the Steve Harvey example, in no particular order, here the fundamental elements that he had, which were part of the step one, I would consider common denominator. He had a plan. He had faith and belief. And once you have a plan, your belief level, because a plan can serve as a roadmap, your belief level will go increase. He had a plan, faith, belief. He had a goal. And he had a team. And like I said, his team and close, if you go online, he's on about at least 90 to 100 radio stations with the Steve Harvey Morning Show. Now, I'm just going off the morning show. I'm not going off his Family Feud paychecks or nothing like that, because with the radio station, that's something that he can control. What stations are going to take the station. Because then there's, although Steve Harvey had to come up and earn $750,000 net to himself to pay out, all right, the people helping him, those radio stations, they had to get blessed too. So when you're in your plan, you're going to have to include something with others that are helping you. They get blessed. All right. Delmar, want to add anything to that?
No, I think again, as you're saying, that I think one word that you need to stress is belief in self. Nobody could do what Steve Harvey did. No one could be him.
Right.
So in this element, you got to believe that God gave you the ability to do what your mind and your vision says. You got to it. Some of what Ray Charles' mother told him, Ray, you're blind, not stupid. It's different. So,
right.
God believed in self, and Ray Charles believed in self, not changing subject. So Steve Harvey believed that he could do that. He did.
Right. Matter of fact, in that the movie Ray played by, what's his name, Jamie Foxx?
Yeah.
Man, the woman, the actress that played Ray Charles' mother, man, she nailed that role.
Yeah.
She nailed it. Okay, we got about 8 minutes left, so we're going to play this and be right back.
Mm-hmm. that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
All right, it is January... What's today's date? January 17th. Of a brand new year. And before people forget their New Year's resolutions, or whatever you want to call it, let me add a little bit more time on to the clock here. Okay. That's done. As Delmore stated, what are these are 6 basic elements, which is part of this common denominator, which goes into our 7-8-1 formula. You need a plan. Within that plan, you need to have a goal. Work. Let's see what. Plan, faith, goal, work, belief, and team. All right. And that's how anybody can achieve any particular type goal, particularly if it appears to be, I mean, because what Steve Harvey experienced for all practical purposes looked like it was an impossible, I mean, $650,000 every month. And then he had his regular living expenses because, you know, he's married with a family and all that. But he sat down and got a plan together on how he was going to do it. The IRS said, "All right, here's our plan. You got to pay us $650,000 a month. You can't miss any payments. If you do, you go, that's it. We take, seize your house, seize everything you got, you go to prison." All right, that's their plan if he didn't pay. Okay. So I imagine the first thing he probably had to do, other than pray, is sit down. Well, Del Mar, hold it. You're our coach here. I guess sit down and pray for God to give you the plan on how to do that. Because, like I say, now we can look back at hindsight 2020 vision. We figured we can go to his website. So he had all these radio stations. So, you know, he wasn't trying to get $650,000 from one source. Obviously, he couldn't go to any bank and borrow $650,000 from each and every bank. So that didn't happen. So he had to actually work and earn it. So any closing statements on you know, I guess the plan would be the first thing, wouldn't it be?
Well, that's definitely what's got to be in writing. Habakkuk 2:2, right now. But keep in mind, Steve Harvey is greater today because of the problem than he would have had not had the problem. That challenge caused him to grow and become somebody he never imagined.
Right.
So the situation, what we share with people, if you want to become more, again, the problem you face is an opportunity for you to develop and become somebody you never imagined. And that's what he did. We'll talk more about that. The challenge is there for you to become a greater person.
And you know, hold on, I got to write that down in the program notes for today. Oh, hold it, man. Oh, let me put it in my phone. That'll be quicker. The problem you face is an opportunity.
That's right.
You know, hold it.
Become somebody you never knew or believed could be.
Problem you face is an opportunity to become greater. All right, I got that in the program notes on Blog Talk Radio. All right, we're going to wrap it up today on that. 781, which stands for 7, if you want a debt-free house, particularly tiny house, if you might not want to live in it, you might want to rent it out, Airbnb. 7 people, 8 hours, with your team, and the goal is to build that one house, but we've broken down even further. I get sit down and write out a plan, as you stated. Habakkuk 2:2, write the vision and make it plain. So, and he's got audio on that too, but we'll get to that tomorrow. On that note, that's it for today. Thank you, Delmar. Any closing comments before we sign off for today?
Just do it.
Well, that sums it up. Just do it.